Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
8 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and when you are the general manager of a baseball team and you sit in the box and you watch a game like last night's, so much good, and in the end, you know, that Achilles heel that from time to time comes back to bite you. As the Nationals last night, resilience personified. Davey Martinez has talked that about his club all year, and last night, no exception. They had one base runner basically in five innings against Julio Teheran. Could not get anything going against the veteran right-hander, but that didn't matter, as we talk about. 27 outs or 27 outs. And here's why, with this starting pitching staff, even when it hasn't had its best stuff, Strasburg was not perfect by any means on Thursday night. That first inning was a marathon. Patrick Corbin, not quite as sharp last night. And that's why, though, when you have these kind of guys, even when they don't have their best, they keep you close, because with this group, they have the ability, with one swing of the bat, to get themselves back in a close game. And last night, no exception, as Victor Robles does just that in the ninth inning. But certainly the story of the game from a evening ago, clearly, you know, Fernando Rodney going a second inning, and in that second inning, there were a couple of close pitches in the first at-bat that he didn't get, got ahead of Dansby Swanson, who then poked one through the hole on the left side, and it was on from there, and you kind of sensed that imminent disappointment was coming. And let's face it, the Braves are a good club, and that's why they made the Nats pay for not being able to get outs last night, for not being able to throw strikes. Luke Jackson threw two very difficult sliders to Victor Robles that just about 80% of batters would have swung at. Robles, two tremendous takes in a row. That got him ahead in the count. That forced Luke Jackson to come with a fastball, and Victor Robles did the job with it. Same thing happened. You've got Rodney facing Freddie Freeman, and then you've got Rodney facing Josh Donaldson. And Josh Donaldson right now having a terrific part of the campaign for the Atlanta Braves. And when you talk about, free agents in the offseason, here's the list. If you're not going to re-sign Anthony Rendon, it's Josh Donaldson. That's the only other free agent third baseman out there, which is why if Rendon hits the market, then there's going to be tremendous bidding on both accounts. Rendon's certainly going to outbid Donaldson overall in terms of annual value, but you know that those are the two third basemen. Donaldson playing very well right now for the Braves, though you got to feel that eventually Austin Riley is that guy with Ender Inciarte back. Inciarte had his first game back Thursday night against the Nationals. But right now, if you don't re-sign Anthony Rendon, Josh Donaldson is the other alternative. Though that's the list at third base. Grant Paulson and I talked about that a little bit this week on the show, about how if you did not re-sign Anthony, here were your choices. And Josh Donaldson would be that guy. Josh Donaldson made a hell of a defensive play last night, as we saw, too. So, as you would expect, two playoff teams, two playoff caliber clubs. They gave you a great game last night. Unfortunately, it was the guys that hit last that had the hammer, and they win it by a score of 4-3. But we could go back, and obviously the Fernando Rodney ninth inning will be the highlight of the game. But could also go back and look at the fact that I mentioned earlier, You know, the Nats could not get anything going against Julio Teheran. And that's another part of the issue. Two nights ago, this team scored 13 runs. You're doing that against a guy that's just up from Gwinnett. Good prospect, though. I mean, they expect Kyle Wright to be part of their rotation there in the future for the Atlanta Braves. But, you know, last night, you had to try and get something going, and Teheran was good. I mean, Teheran could not miss a spot last night, it seemed like, over the first five innings for the Braves. It was quite effective. Very, very impressive last night. Go to the bottom of the fourth, and as I said, Austin Riley, nowhere near hitting what he did when he first came up. When the Nats were down there in May, we were broadcasting those games with Charlie Slows. I mean, Austin Riley was, you know, playing out of his mind at that point for the Braves. But that average has gone way down. But, you know, he's a guy that still, you know, is going to be a star for this Braves team coming up. Is he here a little bit earlier than they expected? Probably. Did he have success earlier than they expected? You bet. Last night, the bottom of the fourth, he had success.
Three balls, no strikes, with Flowers on deck. The pitch, and a swing and a line drive left center field to the gap, and it's down, and the Braves will take the lead. A two-hopper off the wall on a 3-0 pitch. It's crushed into left center for an RBI double for Austin Riley. Back-to-back two-out doubles. Atlanta 1, the Nationals nothing.
Dave Jagler with a call last night on the 106.7 The Fan Nationals Radio Network. Meanwhile, fifth inning, when the Braves are at the plate and Freddie Freeman is up there in an RBI situation, that's normally a time to panic. Last night, no exception.
Pitch to Freeman, swung on, lifted in the air to shallow right center. That's going to be a base hit. Off the slider, Acuna around third. He'll come in to score. Eaton's throw will go to second base. Freddie Freeman doing what he does best. Got him to chase sliders off the plate last time. That time he just stuck the bat out there, hoping to make contact, and slapped it over the second baseman Kendrick into right center. Freddie Freeman drives in his 76th run of the year, and the Braves now lead by the score of 2-0.
Charlie Slows with the call last night in the fifth inning for the Nationals Radio Network. Top of the sixth, the Nationals would get something going, and without question, when you have an RBI situation, not many batters you would rather have up there for the Nationals than Anthony Rendon, who came through again.
Here's the set for Teheran. 3-1 pitch. Swinging a line drive right center field. That's falling. It's a base hit. The Nationals are on the board. Parra scores. Eaton races for third. He'll stop there as Anthony Rendon is aboard with an RBI single. 66th RBI for Rendon. It's now the Braves 2 and the Nationals 1, with Juan Soto coming to the plate and Brian Snitker coming out to make a pitching change.
Bottom of the sixth, Ronald Acuna Jr. would extend that lead to 3-1 with an RBI double. That would set up the heroics in the top of the ninth inning. Ryan Zimmerman would keep the Nats alive. He would hit a sharp single through the left side for a base hit. And after a couple of sliders, good takes by Victor Robles last night. And again, for a young hitter, a pitch like that, so difficult, so tantalizing. And somehow he took him. That forced Luke Jackson to throw a fastball. That forced the Braves closer to blow another save this season.
And now the set. The 2-1.
Swinging a long drive. Deep left field. Way back. Going. Going. It's a game-tying two-out, two-run home run for Victor Robles. Bang! Zoom goes Robles with a titanic blast here with two out of the top of the ninth inning on a 2-1 pitch from Luke Jackson. It's a brand-new game here at the top of the ninth inning with Robles' 14th home run of the year. RBIs 44 and 45. It's the Nationals 3 and the Braves 3.
So Victor Robles coming up with a big shot last night in the top of the ninth inning. And again, as we talked about, it's the resilience of this ball club. They do it, you know, they've done it a lot this year. They've done it a lot during this hot streak that they've been on. But on the other side, as we said, you know, one of the things about this run for the Nationals is it's been answered for the most part by the Braves. They've been equally as hot. So the Nats have not been able to gain the kind of ground that teams like Oakland have in the American League West, that Cleveland has in the American League Central. I mean, those teams have erased a ton of games because they got red hot like the Nationals. Unfortunately, Atlanta has been equally as hot, especially in terms of number of wins during that stretch. And Josh Donaldson would send the folks home in the suburbs of Atlanta happy last night.
Here's the 2-0. Swung on and hit in the air to left center field over the head of Robles chasing back. He'll never get there. It's one hop off the wall and the game is over. Donaldson with a walk-off single wins it for the Braves. And the celebration on, the fireworks going off here at SunTrust Park. The Nationals were down to their last out when Robles hit a two-run homer. But Fernando Rodney, after the Nationals tie the game, cannot get an out in the bottom of the ninth inning. He walked Acuna, Swanson single to left. He walked Freeman on four pitches. Fell behind Donaldson 2-0, and he blasts one to left center field for the walk-off single, and the Braves win it in the bottom of the ninth inning, 4-3. They go back up by 6.5 games in the National League East.
So that's how it ends last night in Atlanta. And, you know, tonight, Anibal Sanchez, and tomorrow, likely Austin Voth now, in a series that started, obviously, with tremendous enthusiasm. You lose a close game in a good pitching matchup between Corbin and Tehran. Now, you're hoping Sanchi is as good as he was his first start in Atlanta, where he had perfect game through five innings there. Austin Voth pitched pretty well against the Braves here in D.C. through six innings. So now you're dependent on those two guys. Oh, why am I saying that? That's because we found out yesterday, finally, a little more definition on Max Scherzer and the fact that he's got a bursar sac issue and had to have a cortisone shot. If you've ever had a cortisone shot, one time in the wrist, one time in the shoulder for me, never had any pain in either since then. So more than likely you can get that, you know, to get that pain to go away and that discomfort to go away. The problem is it takes a little time. Now, Max said, Sean Kelly, the former Nat, who he obviously keeps in touch with, talked about it. Sean had the exact same thing. Max said it took 5 to 6 days to be okay. So that means you're probably going to, if everything goes perfectly, you would probably get Scherzer, not necessarily for Colorado, but for when the Dodgers come in. And you're hoping it would be Friday. That way you could throw Max maybe in the Wednesday game against the Braves, so you would get him there once. But as I said during our show with Grant and Danny this week, if it means missing two starts, three starts now, to make sure he's still there for all of August, September, and hopefully sometime in October, you have to let this sort itself out properly, because any of you who've had back issues out there, especially lower back issues, back spasms, you know, once you've had a back issue, you can take all the ibuprofen in the world. You can get all the cortisone shots in the world. Those back issues are likely going to, you know, raise themselves up again. So from that standpoint, you want Max to get as close to 100% as possible so this doesn't become a problem that costs him a good portion now of this second half of the season. Because, as I said, the numbers of candidates in that wild card chase are dwindling by the day. Teams are starting to, you know, regress a little bit because of their lack of depth. Some have played over their head a little bit, and some of them are starting to regress mightily. And granted, if you can get through this stretch right here, you've still got Strasburg, Corbin, and Sanchez. You can get decent outings from those guys, you know, through this stretch. Hold your head above water until you get Max coming back. Then that's the way you want to be able to do your business in August and September at full steam. And if it means missing Max a couple of starts now to get him healthy to do that, so be it. It's your season on the line. And don't for one minute think that people are playing for next year and the year after. Everybody just about plays for right now. The most important season is the one right now. And some fascinating cases coming up here in terms of buyers and sellers. Coming up later on in the hour, we will talk about buyers and sellers. We'll talk about why some teams who may have been buyers at the All-Star game might be sellers now. And there are plenty of candidates whose situation is changing by the day. We'll also take you around all of last night's action around Major League Baseball. Guy that certainly will be on the move. I will be shocked if Mike Leake is not moved between now and July 31st. If Mike Leake pitches like he did last night, if I'm Mike Rizzo, I would drive a U-Haul van to Seattle to get him. He had a perfect game into the ninth inning last night against the Angels. As always is the case, what will be the compensation that you must give up to get a player? Those topics and more. We'll hear from Davey Martinez as we'll get his thoughts on his bullpen management in the late innings last night. Certainly the hot topic. The Nats fall to the Braves last night by a score of 4-3. It's Nats First Pitch right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Of course, the hot topic last night for the postgame, as Twitter was abuzz, as you might expect. No doubt, the bullpen management, Fernando Rodney getting a second inning. Sean Doolittle had started to loosen up in case the Nats took the lead after the Victor Robles game-tying home run. And in the end, Alex Chappell kicked things off from Masson, asking Davey Martinez the obvious question.
Davey, why wasn't Sean Doolittle ready?
He was ready. You know, we wanted to, we liked the matchup with Fernando, with the two righties, and then it just didn't work out. You can't, we're playing it on the road. You know, Doolittle comes in the game for a save. We tie game. So he comes in right there. We end up pinch in for him right away. Then you know, we're looking at who knows who.
Even if saving Doolittle for a save situation, were you concerned about Rodney's pitch count? He's not a guy that typically goes 2 innings.
But he's done that. You know, he went 2 innings down AAA. He's done a couple times. So, I went out there, and he said he was good. You know, after the game, he told me, he says, "Hey, I'm ready to pitch tomorrow." So, he threw well. Walking the first walking Acuna was the big thing.
Once those two guys are on, would you have liked to maybe have a lefty up for Freeman, or is that Rodney's inning? No matter.
Yeah,
what?
I mean, you got Rodney's the eighth inning guy, and Doolittle's your closer, and those guys have been really good. He was throwing 95, 96.
Doolittle was warming up still kind of frantically there at the end there.
Yeah, he got up. We thought if at that point, looking at the pitch count, if we get a strikeout or a ground ball in that situation, then then we're looking at Doolittle for Markakis. And then we'd have to double switch, assuming that Doolittle could go back out the next inning.
Bringing in Soto to play that spot. I know ideally you want a right-handed position player there, but are you just kind of hamstrung at that point that somebody, one of them, is going to have to come in to do
well,
that?
Well, I know Soto has taken ground balls at first base, and he's taken them all over there, so it didn't really bother me. It's just like a left-handed first baseman.
What was the confusion with the glove? He tossed.
Well, he thought he was going to go to first base, and he was going, I wanted to keep Zim at first, and so he can't have first base glove unless you're playing first base.
It was a big moment at the top of the inning before all that.
And Robles crushed the ball. I mean, that was an unbelievable home run. Really good swing. Like I said, these guys, they never give up. They fight. They keep fighting. So up to that point, Turan pitched really, really well. I mean, he threw the ball in, out, and had a good sinker tonight, and threw the ball well for a while.
What has Victor shown you as a rookie in those moments? It's not the first time he's done something like that, to have the poise in those situations to do that.
Yeah, you said it. He has the poise. You know, he's a kid. He loves the game, and he likes big moments, and he's proven that.
Before that home run, the offense just kind of didn't really have it tonight. What were you seeing with the at-bats?
I mean, like I said, I mean, he was in and out, fastballs up. You know, just couldn't get nothing going. You know, we had one moment Blevins, you know, faced Soto there, and he got him out. I said, but other than that, I mean, we didn't do much with the bats today.
Davey Martinez, indeed, capturing it both at the beginning, talking about the bullpen management at the end. One of the big keys is they just simply didn't score enough runs last night against the Atlanta Braves, especially against Julio Teheran early in the contest. Yesterday, Grant and myself had a chance to talk to Nationals catcher Kurt Suzuki, as he and Yan Gomes have come over and been a really solid duo. They have upgraded this catching position, and while Gomes' numbers are not as good as they were in the American League, Kurt Suzuki, quite frankly, is having one of the best years of his career for the Nationals, his second tour of duty. And it's amazing, you know, we see guys come and go. We see pitchers come and go quickly. We see position players around the league constantly come and go quickly in their careers. There's something about a catcher, especially a good one, a guy that's a very good receiver and a guy that's a great team player. For some reason, some of these guys can stand around forever and ever. And I think Kurt Suzuki is one of those guys. I mean, he's a guy that could probably, you know, go till he's 38 or 39 at the rate that he's going, just because of how good he is in the clubhouse and the value he brings to a team. And we talked to him yesterday, talked about that big uprising with 13 runs to start the series on Thursday.
Yeah, it was nice. You know, it's always nice to start off a series like that, especially a big series with Atlanta in the division. They're obviously leading the division. So sometimes those nights where you get in late and, you know, get no sleep, you come out and you score a lot of runs. And luckily for us, it happened last night.
Kurt, how tough is the preparation? Because you all didn't find out until late the night before that you were going to see Kyle Wright instead of Julio Teheran. If it's a guy that's an established pitcher, you've got a book on him. But a guy like Wright, you don't. How tough is that preparation for the new hurler in that situation?
It's almost better because you don't have all this information where you're overthinking things and stuff like that. You know, you just kind of go out there and trust your instincts and see the ball and hit it. Obviously, we have a little basic scouting report on what he has in the minor leagues and his brief time in the big leagues. But for the most part, you go up there you know, you just use your instincts, like I said, and it plays out better because you don't overthink it.
How about Stras? 3 hits, a homer, and 5 batted in last night.
Yeah, he made that look pretty easy. It was a pretty cool thing to see. You know, I've never seen that in my entire career. And you know, especially homer and driving all those runs and three for three and, you know, pitch well. It was pretty cool.
There's only been 2 pitchers, in fact, during the DH era that started back in the 70s that have ever pulled off the night he had last night. So most of us have never seen it. Kurt Suzuki's on Grant and Danny. Now, he was dancing in the dugout. I love that you guys have the little dance tunnel. Looks like Gerardo Parra was brought in seasons in the middle of a lot of those things. You're rolling 19 of 25, 20 of 27, 32 and 13 now, the best team in baseball since late May. What clicked? What changed? And how did you know that you guys were going to turn the corner if you did?
You know, we've got a bunch of veteran guys on our team, you know, and we've got guys that have been to the World Series, guys that have played in the playoffs a lot. You know, I think that, you know, obviously it wasn't the start that we wanted, but at the same time, you know, we understood it was a long season. We understood how good our team was. We had a ton of injuries in the beginning of the year, and we knew once we got guys healthy, things would start rolling, and it showed, you know.
Kurt, for you and Yan being new guys to the club, and in the case of at least 4 of the starters you're working with right now are veteran guys, but how long does it take for you and Yan as new catchers coming over to a ball club to get in step with those starting pitchers within that rotation so everything between you really becomes instinctive and you guys can get on that same page and start rolling?
Yeah, it takes some time. You know, it definitely takes some getting used to and all that stuff. Spring training is not long enough to get on the a good groove. You know, you have to go in the season and things like that. But you know, I think for myself and Jan included, I think we've been around for a little bit now that we kind of understand patterns and sequences, and you know, we understand how important it is to get on the same page as the pitcher. And I think just being around for a little bit now and understanding the process and things like that, it might speed it up a little bit, but you know, it definitely takes some time and time to getting used to, but you know, we feel like we've done a pretty good job so far.
Kurt, two-parter here. First, I think you're better offensively now than you were when you were here the first time. You know, I think you're better now in your mid-30s than you were in your high 20s. I want to know if you agree with that. And the numbers bear it out. Your OPS is your highest three OPSs in your career were 17, 18, 19 at ages 33, 34, 35. If that's the case, why do you think that is? What has changed late in your career here?
I don't know. You know, it's a weird game. You know, I feel like, you know, I started off really strong in the beginning of my career, then kind of hit a little middle pass and got good and kind of faded away and then, you know, came back strong the last couple of years. I think it's just baseball. The ebbs and flows of baseball. Obviously, I would have loved to sustain, you know, the productivity, but, you know, with the position that I'm in and things like that, you know, you could say that, you know, not playing on an everyday basis has a lot to do with it, especially, you know, getting older in my age, kind of keeping me fresher, keeping me stronger, and things like that, I think, that have helped. But, you know, there's some few swings, things that I tweak in my swing, but nothing crazy. You know, my swing's pretty much the same as it always been. It's just, you know, I can't explain it.
So the analytics part of it, you know, you're not necessarily being like a launch angle guy. You're not one of these guys who changed with the information that we have late in your career.
No, I think when I do think about that launch angle and all that stuff, I start hitting fly balls and then start popping up and swinging and missing and all that kind of stuff. You know, I just try to hit the ball hard. You know, I feel like my swing has a natural loft in it anyway, but when I think about launch angle, it gets a little even more exaggerated, which I don't want. So the more direct I can be to the ball, the better. And you know, if it goes in the air over the fence, that's great. But I'm just really honestly just trying to hit the ball hard.
Kurt, as a veteran, you've been in a lot of clubhouses. But as we observe you all as major league players, you're the best in the profession. We almost look at you as robots from time to time because you're pros. But do we underrate a free and, you know, fun clubhouse that it seems that you all have right now, where it just seems like you guys are playing relaxed, you guys are having a lot of fun out there, and thus it is translated into consistent results for this team? Do we underrate that part of the game for you all?
We try to keep this game fun, you know. Like I said, you know, we got a veteran team. We got guys that have been through the trenches, guys that have been through the grind, you know, for a long time. And you know, we understand that you got to have fun. You know, you got to have fun in this game. The more stress and all that kind of stuff you put on yourself and, you know, as collectively as a team, you know, it turns out to be a long season. You know, the more fun you can have, you know, enjoying being around each and every one of our teammates, I think, makes the season go by better. And, you know, we're just trying to do that right now and, you know, translating onto the field, and it's been great.
That's Kurt Suzuki with Grant Paulson and myself yesterday as we talked to him here on 106.7 The Fan. Nats and the Atlanta Braves tonight at 7:20, 6:50 for all the pregame news and notes. Reminder, of course, tomorrow's game. Some of your very early pocket schedules may have had that as an afternoon game. That is a night game tomorrow night. That is part of the ESPN package now. So that will be a national television game coming up tomorrow night. And we'll have it for you here on The Fan with the pregame getting underway at 7 o'clock tomorrow night right here on 106.7 The Fan. Coming up, we'll take a look at the night around baseball. Another near no-hitter, a perfect game in a ninth inning from Mike Leake of Seattle. And we'll talk about all the other results. Update you on the National League wild card race where the Nationals are on top of the heap. We'll tell you who is making a move to stay in the race and those who are seemingly falling out of the race. We'll do that when we return. It's Nat's first pitch on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. The news for the Nationals, three-time Cy Young Award winner Max Scherzer will not come off the 10-day injured list to start for the Nationals against Atlanta this weekend. Cortisone shot Tuesday to address inflammation in the bursa sac under his right shoulder blade. Manager Dave Martinez says Scherzer will have to overcome that last little bit of discomfort before he can throw a bullpen session and prove he's ready to pitch in a game. Coming up, home games with the Rockies, the Dodgers, and the Braves again. So hopefully you can get him back. Scherzer said Sean Kelly, his former teammate, had the same deal, and it took him 5 or 6 days to get through it. So hopefully 5 or 6 days from the cortisone shot, we'll get him back sometime Monday or Tuesday, maybe for a bullpen, and we'll see if he can throw the weekend against the Dodgers or even against Atlanta. Dodgers weekend series should be lit around here. You almost wish, though, in a kind of a way, from a competitive standpoint, you wish the Braves series would have been on the weekend where you can get a little, you can get a few more people here in the ballpark. In case you missed it, too, Grant and I talked about it the moment it came out yesterday. Got a lot of social media attention yesterday. Kids 12 and under, you sign up for the Junior Nationals Club. You will eat for free between now and Labor Day. Kids' meals will be available at Nationals Park. You can go to nationals.com for all of that information. This is a step in the right direction because there's no question in professional sports, we have priced families out of coming to the ballpark, going to the arena, coming to the football stadium. We have priced some of our loyal fans out of those particular opportunities. And even in this case, this is at least a small way for a family to be able to bring a couple of kids who like baseball out to the ballpark and, you know, at least save a few dollars when they come out there. Because all you have to do, I mean, and you know, baseball organizations, football teams, basketball, hockey, D.C. United, they all know what they're charging. They all know the cost of parking. They all know what they're making on concession. Don't for 1 minute believe that these teams don't understand what they're doing when they set those prices. But it's also taken a little bit of a reevaluation. We saw the Falcons do it, namely with some of their concession prices. You've got to have some choices in the ballpark that are affordable for some people, or they're just going to punt. They're just going to sit at home and watch the product. They're not going to come to the ballpark and share in it. And, you know, there's a lot being said, especially when your better teams come in. You know, next week should be a great week in Nationals Park. I mean, you got some stars coming in. You got Charlie Blackman coming in. And Nolan Arenado from Colorado. You got the Dodgers. My God, their whole team's a star right now. It seems the way they're hitting the baseball. And then you got the Braves coming in for three important games. You know, and unfortunately, one of those is a Wednesday 12:05 game. But, you know, you understand getaway days and having some earlier starts. So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, this ballpark should be pretty busy coming up over the next week. You got three really good clubs coming in. You've got star power on all three of them. And if you have an opportunity to get to the ballpark, these are the kind of teams that you want to see. These are the kind of clubs you want to pay your money to come see. If you're going to have some money set aside to go watch a Major League Baseball game during the summer, one of these next three series is going to be a great choice to come out to the ballpark. And then that's stepping forward with an opportunity for families with kids 12 and under. Just go sign up for free for the Junior Nationals Club at nationals.com, and you'll be able to take advantage of that offer when you come to the ballpark. Last night, more teams bidding to stay in the wild card, and there is nothing quite like, and it has been tough to watch all season, because those of us, and a good friend of mine, Tony Mercurio, down in Norfolk, good friends with Bruce Bochy. And way back when Bruce was really starting out as a manager, you know, got to know a lot about Bruce Bochy. Guy was constantly on our station down in Norfolk and everything. and just a terrific guy. And with what you have seen most of this season be for the San Francisco Giants, you felt for Bruce because this is a guy that has accomplished an awful lot as a manager in his career. And this season looked like it was headed for Port-a-John City pretty much right from the get-go. But all of us, but as we say, we try to tell you, we try to talk you off the panic meter, just like the Nats at one point were 19-31. 162 games is a long darn time. Last night, Alex Dickerson scored on an error by Mets left fielder Dominic Smith in the 10th. Giants walked off the Mets, 1-0. Jacob deGrom's 10 strikeout outing over 7 scoreless innings goes for naught for the Mets. And the offense for New York only mustering 3 hits in the loss. Smith dropped what appeared to be a routine pop fly. That allowed Derrickson to come all the way around to score. Second night in a row, the Giants walked off the Mets in extra innings. Bruce Bochy says getting back to .500 for this team based on where they were, huge.
And there were times we needed to slug it. We did that. So we're playing winning baseball. And so this is it's a good mark considering where we're at. And, you know, we got to keep marching.
Elsewhere in that National League wild card race, an incredible game last night in Cincinnati. The Reds were up at one point by a count of 7-0 in this contest. And a lot of times you get up 7-0 unless you're in Colorado or Boston, maybe, you know, even Wrigley Field, the wind blowing in the right direction. You're pretty much home free, as we like to say. But the Cardinals trailing 7-0 going to the 6th inning. By the end of the 6th inning, they led 10-7. And Jose Martinez with a big blow, 414-footer to break a 7-all tie, 3-run shot. And the Reds would eventually rally themselves after being down 12-7. They got it to 12-11 in the 9th inning. Cardinals bullpen, which at one point earlier this season looked like it was going to be a bit of a strength for them, injuries now have torn that bullpen apart. And it's been interesting to watch them. Mike Wacha actually picked up the win in relief here in this game after, you know, taking over for Adam Wainwright, who gave up 9 hits, 7 runs in 3 1/3 innings last night. But unfortunately for the Reds, you know, they jump out to a big lead. And this is a club, look, Cincinnati had 18 hits last night. They have got a ton of terrific young talent playing right now. They've got some live arms, obviously in the rotation and in the bullpen. They've got a lot of good ingredients. Unfortunately, moments like this are what is costing them taking that next step in that Central Division where everybody just continues to pound on everybody as this season has gone along. And they may not necessarily be a problem all the way through this season, but they're going to be a good club and a club to watch going forward. You got to like a lot of what they have right now in terms of a good young core to build with Cincinnati. But things starting to get away from them a little bit now. Pretty much mathematically, as we said, everybody but Miami was eliminated virtually from wild card conversation. But even the Reds now, with that loss last night, are still 7 back in the loss column and 6 for that second wild card. So it's not mathematically impossible, but they've lost 4 in a row. So they've lost opportunity to stay even closer in the race. That Giants win last night, by the way, they are 2 back overall, 4 back of the Nationals in the wild card, in the loss column, 3 behind the Cardinals, who now reside in the number 2 spot overall by a game in the loss column over the Phillies. Phillies last night beating Pittsburgh by a score of 6-1. Give a tip of the cap here recently. A little more activity this week for the former Virginia Cavalier, Adam Haseley. Haseley went 2-for-5 last night, drove in 2 runs with his second home run off of the season. Jake Arrieta, who, again, with those bone spurs in his elbow, he's gutting it out. 5 2/3 last night. No decision. Juan Nicasio picked up the win in relief. And the Pirates are another one of those teams that I talked about that are, you know, they have had, if you go back and look at the Pirates this year, they have huge swings. They'll win 5 or 6. They'll lose 5 or 6. It's been wicked swings for the Pirates so far. Now, will they be a seller? Because they could get top dollar in the bidding for Felipe Vázquez, the former National. It's been closing for them. Obviously, several teams out there, even teams in the National League wild card race above them, guarantee you Philly would send a stretch limo to the Pirates to get him to be a closer. Cardinals would do the same thing right now. Team like the Brewers would love to have him to go in the back end of that bullpen with Josh Hader. So bidding is going to be fierce for him. Conversations, phone calls. That commerce is going to pick up for Felipe Vázquez. Kirby Yates in San Diego, they are 4.5 back, 6 back of the top spot, 5 back in the loss column for the second spot. So Kirby Yates is going to be a guy to watch in San Diego here. And if the Rockies aren't careful, by the time they come through Washington next week, they could be in deep doo-doo here too. They've lost 5 in a row. And they are 4.5 back, 6 in the loss column behind the Nationals. So while Colorado, the Padres, the Pirates, the Reds all going in one direction, out of nowhere, here have come the San Francisco Giants to win 7 in a row, and they're back at the 500 mark. So a team that looked like it might be selling bullpen pieces like Will Smith, like Sam Dyson. I don't think you're going to pry those guys away from the Giants. Now, they certainly feel like they are every bit a part of this, and probably no shot you're going to get Madison Bumgarner away from them, because this team has played its way back into being able to make a run in the National League. I mean, you look at the bullpen of the Cardinals and Phillies. If you're the Giants, you're like, man, our situation's a lot better than theirs. Even the Nationals, you feel great if you're the Giants with your back end of the pen right now compared to just about anybody else in that National League wild card race. I mean, Brewers outside of Hader, Nats, you know, up and down performance of guys like Rainey, who's great one day, command issues the next, as he tries to settle into his first big-time role as a major league reliever. It's the first time he has been in a pennant race. And obviously, that's got a lot more pressure on you. So if you're the Giants, you got to love what the back end of your pen looks like. And this is the July 31st trap for this year. You've got to make a decision between now and then. There is no waiver deadline. So unless you designate a guy for assignment, nobody's picking up anybody unless, you know, they're out of your own system in the month of August and September. So general managers sitting in those offices talking to their people, these conversations have that much more urgency here over the coming days as teams have to decide, are we in it or are we out of it? Do we strike while the iron is hot to get some compensation, or do we let guys go? So Mike Leake, who had the perfect game into the ninth inning last night for a downtrodden Mariners team, they beat the Angels 10-0. That's a guy that's going to probably get some attention here over the next week and a half as well. That'll do it for us. Don't forget, it's the Nats and the Atlanta Braves, 7:20 tonight, 6:50 for the pregame show with Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler. Coming up tonight, my name's Pete Medhurst, right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.